Carl Blake says pork, the other white meat, should be pork. Try the Iowa Swabian Hall. He says his pig tastes better, so good the fat melts in your mouth. It's Talk of Iowa. I'm Dennis Reese for Charity Nebbe. Carl Edgar Blake II farms in rural Iowa County. His feeling that today's pork is too dry with not enough flavor led him to research pigs in 19th century Germany, especially those created by King Wilhelm I. He then bred the fatty Chinese swine, the Meischen, with the Russian wild boar to create the Iowa Swabian Hall pig. Chefs around the country are loving it. We'll find out why. Also, we'll talk to Iowa's only grower of edible beans. Jason Grimm says his black turtle beans are selling like crazy. But first, the news. It's Talk of Iowa. I'm Dennis Reese for Charity Nebbe. Carl Edgar Blake II, an Iowa pig farmer, wasn't impressed by the advertising campaign, Pork the Other White Meat. He says the pork we eat today is too dry and flavorless. Blake wanted a fat pig, juicy, with dark marbled flesh, and the fat so good you can eat it. His search for the perfect pig took him to 19th century Germany, later to China. Finally, Blake has bred his 21st century American version he calls the Iowa Swabian Hall, sort of a combination of the Meischen hogs from King Wilhelm I of Germany, Russian wild boars. It's an odd-looking critter, but Blake says it's the best pork in the world. A number of contests that the Iowa Swabians have won may prove this. Blake was recently featured on the Travel Channel program Bizarre Foods, and later this month, he and a pig will be on the Colbert Report. Chefs in some of the finest restaurants in the country are now serving the meat. Blake raises his Iowa Swabian Halls at his rustic rooster farm near Frederica in Bremer County. Well, let me ask you first, Carl, what is the Iowa Swabian Hall pig?
The pig was actually designed to recreate a pig that was created in 1821 Germany, and it won four World Fairs. The reason this pig was interesting because back then there was a lard type pig, and I decided to raise the pig because a guy in 2007 brought a pig into the United States called the Mangalitsa. And since I couldn't get the actual breed stock from Germany, and this Mangalitsa was over here, I asked the guy with the Mangalitsa if I could resell his pigs or grow them. And he said no, he wasn't going to let any breed stock out. So I did some research and found out that he kept telling me that the Mangalitsa in Europe was the number one pig. And I said, well, no, the Iberico pig from Spain was probably the number one pig in Europe. And then I did a bunch of research and found out, you know, I don't speak Swedish or German or anything else, but I could tell by the bar charts and stuff that, they have these nice little graphs of who won what and things like that, and the Mangalitsa was like number 3, 4, and 5 pig. It wasn't number one. The number one pig was the Swabian Hall. Beat it almost every time. So I thought, well, maybe I can recreate that pig if they won't let me have it here. So I was looking at what the breed stock, what made up this pig and how it was created, and I discovered that it was created by using the Meishan pig from China, which is the fattest pig in the world. The pig actually has like 18% meat and 82% fat. It's so fat, in fact, that instead of looking like a big, fat, bloated pig, it's actually, the fat is so smooth and pure that it hangs right off the bones. It's the ugliest pig you ever seen in your life.
So, Carl, this sounds like a complicated process. I mean, what you're aiming to do is here in Iowa, do your own Iowa Swabian Hall. And so what's the next step?
But I thought, I'll get this pig and I'll just make the Swabian. Well, that's not that easy. What I discovered was the Swabians were still in China and they had never made it to the United States. A friend of mine had contacted me and said, hey, I think there's some of these Chinese pigs over at Iowa State. So I called Iowa State, and sure enough, they had some Swabian Halls or some Meishan pigs there. And I said, well, can I buy some? They said, sure, we're getting rid of them. And so I bought two boars and two sows, and they delivered them the next day. I couldn't believe that. But I was lucky enough that I was able to get the breed stock. So I got the stock there, and then I thought, well, here's my start. And I had some real rough times trying to get the Russian wild boar. The state of Iowa didn't want me to have them, and it was just a nightmare. But I was able to get them because they were at hunting facilities here in Iowa. And I'm exempt for raising them because I'm raising them for food and fiber, not as a hunting pig. But I mated the two together, and out came this beautiful little black pig. And I dubbed that little pig the Iowa Swabian Hall, or our version of the Swabian Hall, with at least the tip of our hats to the Germans, as far as Swabian Hall goes, to let them know, you know, it was a, I mean, we tried to recreate the pig, and I did as best I could with the breed stock that we had.
What's the pig look like?
Well, it's a little black pig. It looks, the pig actually looks almost identical to the Iberico of Spain. It's all black. It's got a nice soft contours as opposed to today's pigs that are like all muscle bound and they look like long distance runners and some of these guys that run the 100-yard dash at, you know, 8 seconds or whatever. Our pigs look a lot like that but our Swabian is nice and smooth and round because it has the most perfect mating of meat and fat, and they're all black from nose to tail.
So what makes this pig so good to eat?
Well, I'm going to say something that, you know, people are going to say, you know, they've had ingrained in their head since 1968 that, oh my God, you can't eat the fat on that because you're going to get fat. Well, that's simply not the case. I mean, humans need a certain amount of the fat and lard and oil and the animals and the vegetables that they eat because, I mean, that our bodies require it. Well, we've been told all these years that if you eat the fat, you're going to be fat. Well, that's not true. It is true if you eat the fat on today's pigs, because today's pigs are fed the wrong stuff. They're fed in confinement. They're fed chemicals. They're fed antibiotics. They're fed things I can't even pronounce. And our pigs have fat on them. The fat is good for you. The fat is a more of a monounsaturated fat than a polyunsaturated fat. And it's something you can actually eat, and it's so succulent. I mean, you can't even cook a pork chop these days because they don't have enough fat to allow your pork chop to even cook.
Yeah.
So our pigs actually have fat in them, and at room temperature, it starts to melt. So it creates this really nice little olive oil kind of oil in your pan, and your pork chop fries in it almost perfectly. And it's so soft and tender to eat, it's like eating Wagyu beef, only you're eating pork. It's not some little chunk of shoe leather you're trying to choke down.
Well, what's the flavor like? Is it better than normal pork?
Well, one of the things that I really, really detest is calling pork the other white meat. And yeah. I'd be glad to get into a debate with anybody in the pork industry that wants to talk about white meat. In fact, I'd get in a contest with any of them right now as to whose pork is better because, you know, if I wanted white meat, I'd go out and I wanted my meat to be like chicken, I'd go out and buy a chicken. Pork was never meant to be that way. Pork was dark red, really dark red meat. In fact, if you get the right kind of Russian pig, it actually looks like beef when it cooks because it doesn't turn white. It's nice and dark, and it's got, I mean, it's just unbelievably good. The dark red meat is what you want. In fact, most people don't even realize it, but if you take a pig from the top to the bottom, from the loin to the belly, the bacon, there's actually four different kinds of meat that you can have the taste of, and it all tastes different. You don't end up with this white pig where all the meat's bland, has no taste and no juice. We end up with a pig that's juicy, red, and it has four different kinds of flavors of meat as you eat it. That's the way pig was intended to be done.
Are restaurants, how are you selling these Iowa Swabian Hall pigs to restaurants? How are they being accepted so far?
Oh, once a chef actually touches ours with a knife, they instantly go crazy for it, and they want more of them. I mean, these pigs, the Mengelitza, they have so much money for it, and the pig has so much lard that they were one-and-done pigs. Chef would buy one, and they were done buying them. The interesting thing about our pigs is that they're not one-and-done. They buy one, and they want to buy a lot more.
So what are your plans to expand your production? How many are you raising right now?
Well, what we're doing is we're starting over with our herd in terms of numbers, because what we're trying to do now is we're going to have a registered breed, and we're going to breed them up just like they do the Kurabuta pigs of Japan. We're going to know the exact breed stock, where it came from, trace the lineage, and we will know that we have, you know, our breed stock and everything is pristine. So we're starting over right now, basically, to recreate the breed. And, I mean, I still have a number of of Swabian sows and boars that we're using, but we're starting over with our numbers so that we can know exactly what is in our breed lines. So the future of this is that what we're trying to do now is, if our television series kicks off, we're actually working on one right now, and if the television series kicks off, we're able to generate some money, we are going to rebuild the farm and really kick this into overdrive and try to provide a lot of pigs, not only to the charcuterie market, which is your aged meats like prosciutto and guanciale and spallaccia and other kinds of aged meats. We are going to try to get bigger numbers so that we can offer, you know, more and more restaurants across the country our pork.
If somebody were driving down the county road and were to take a look at these Iowa Swabian pigs, they're really odd looking. They may not even think they were pigs. Do people sometimes just do a double take when they see these for the first time?
They take a double take. I guess when they see the Mishan, they actually stop and take pictures, and then they come in and ask me, "What is that? Is that a hippo or is that a little elephant or what is that?" And I mean, because they really do. Their scale, you know, their skin is like charcoal gray, bluish, and they don't have much hair, but they got all these wrinkles. And our Swabian Hall is just like this big black thing. And we had some bank robbers up by our they robbed a bank up by our house this last summer, and some of the pigs got loose and were running through the field, and they look like humans running through the field when they're black and long like that. So it's kind of a weird thing. So we have a little bit of that going on all the time.
Well, Carl, tell me a little bit about yourself. You were a farm boy, right?
Yes, sir.
And I'm sure you probably raised some pigs as a kid.
You bet. I raise pigs for the fair every year, and I love doing that.
You also like computers, I understand, and you built your own computers?
Well, I actually was in seventh grade. I started working with computers when they were just still using paper terminals, and I had a weird gift from God. I think it allows me I have this strange thing about remembering long numbers and logic and programming, and I could take a computer apart with a soldering iron and then I can put it back together. So it's just kind of one of those things, I don't know, it's a God's gift. And that's what I did for most of my life, was work on big networks and build internet companies and fix computers. And then now what I'm doing is I'm writing my own software for my pigs, and I'm doing a bunch of wireless stuff and trying to do some more things in technology. And I really enjoy computers. In fact, I'm going to fix some computers at an architectural firm here in just a little bit.
Wow.
And so I get called to do just about anything.
Well, Carl, if you could hold on just a second, we're going to take a break here on Talk of Iowa. I'm talking to Carl Blake. He's come up with the Iowa Swabian Hall Pig, and an operation that's obtained a lot of notoriety nationwide. He's selling these pigs, considered maybe the tastiest of all pigs. And we'll take a break, continue our conversation on Talk of Iowa. Talk of Iowa continues. I'm Dennis Reese, filling in today for Charity Nebbe, continuing my conversation with Carl Blake. He farms in Frederica, Iowa, in Bremer County. He's come up with, I guess you would call it a new pig, the Iowa Swabian Hall, based on some pigs of yore from Europe. It's some people are describing this as the tastiest pork ever. And it's no ordinary pig. Carl, as we were talking, you raised pigs as a kid. You have a lot of other interests in life. But now you've got a great niche product here.
I guess one of the cool things is that I didn't go out and make this pig to go out and try to sell it and push it on people. I handed the pig to the chefs that are out there, and I said, "Here, you tell me what you think of this pig," because it was done in 1821 Germany. What's the likelihood of us even coming close now? And when they tried the pig, I mean, when you have a chef that's done thousands of pigs throughout their life, and he turns around and says to you that's the most magical pig I've ever had in my life, you know, I have to feel like we've accomplished something, something that's been good. And I think that we can take this pig beyond just having a good pig to actually trying to save our family farms and the small farmers. And I think that's, you know, one of the directions we're going to take with this is to not only try to provide more pigs, but for the markets. But I think I'm going to try to help save some of these family farms that are out there that are dying on the vine because they can't get enough money for their pig or the feed price, the cost is so high. I mean, that's another area that we've really done a lot of development in is feeding our pigs and what to feed them. And we reduced our cost from $650 a ton down to $95 a ton.
What do you actually feed them?
Well, our pigs get fed hydroponically grown barley and sometimes wheat and rye. And I sometimes sow that together with radish or peas. And we end up with, I mean, we grow the stuff on a daily basis. We can grow up to a ton a day or 2,000 pounds per day of hydroponically grown food. And it takes us 6 days in the cycle to actually create this feed. Well, while it's not an entire food regimen for the pig, we add milk or dairy products and yams. We actually have a guy down in New Orleans that's raising his pigs on hydroponics and yams. So we actually give the pigs milk and dairy products here. We are doing it just like they do in Germany. They feed them green fodder and milk, and they have a regimen that they use every day.
Now, are they free range? They get to just roam around where they want to go?
Well, free range in Iowa is what? You know, each one of our farms are made up of smaller farms and, I mean, small pieces of property. So we don't have much range anymore, but what's most important about the range aspect of it isn't that a pig gets to be on the range. What's important is the pig gets access to the dirt. The dirt is where the animal gets all of its immunities. It eats thousands of spores of different things in the dirt, and it's consumed through the pig and becomes gives the pig immunities to certain diseases and all kinds of other things. It allows us to raise a healthier pig, but the taste is different too.
So, what's your favorite part? I mean, if you were to sit down at a dinner tonight, having some part of an Iowa Swabian Hall pig, would it be bacon, ham? What's the most flavorful, and what's your favorite?
Well, the interesting thing is I actually designed this pig and wanted to do this pig in a way that allowed us to utilize every aspect of it. The pigs that we have a really long snout and a long nose, and as a result, see, in Italy and France, the finest cut of the pig to them was the cheek or the cheek steak on a pig. And we've actually developed our pig so that it has a nice, good-sized cheek steak. And the guanciale or jowl speck, as they call it in Germany, or even bacon speck. But to me, the finest cut of the entire pig is the cheek steak. It's not only the most unbelievably soft, but it's marbled all the way throughout with this beautiful, beautiful fat. And when you put it on you go to fry it or grill it a little bit, the fat just melts right into the meat, and it's so soft to begin with that it's just a piece of heaven.
Now, you've got some high-end restaurants buying this product in San Francisco, for example. How are they serving it there?
Oh, they serve it in San Francisco. I'm sorry, but I can't pronounce half the stuff they make because it's, I don't know.
That's okay.
I don't even know.
But, that's okay.
I'm just an Iowa pig farmer. I don't eat all that stuff. But we have like the Gramercy Tavern in New York City, and they serve it, and they'll serve almost, you know, nearly the whole pig. I mean, all the components and stuff. The neat thing about these restaurants is they're serving the pig from nose to tail. I don't really do a lot with pork chop chefs, you know, a loin chef, because the pig wasn't designed to have this big, giant 9-inch loin eye. I mean, when you have a pig that has some lard, you have to give up certain things. One of the things that you give up when you buy today's pig is the fact you give up all the succulents, all the juice, and all the flavor, because all you do is get this big, giant muscle. Well, in our pig, you have to give up a little bit to get more better things. And then one of those is the ability to get the succulents and the caramelized fat. So our loin eyes and stuff aren't as big as what they get on today's pigs. But we end up with a whole host of other properties that our pig can do, such as a chef in a high-end restaurant can take the lard and render it and use it to cook their chicken in. They can use it to cook their, you know, hundreds of other products in. And, I mean, head cheese and all of these things that are just phenomenal things to eat, we give those up because everybody just wants a pork chop or a loin. Well, there's a whole lot more to the pig than those two pieces.
What do other Iowa pork producers and the Pork Industry Council and those groups think of what you're doing with your Iowa Swabian Halls? Are they getting any feedback from them?
Yeah, in the beginning, they all told me that I was crazy.
Yeah.
I was a heretic, and there'd be no way that I could possibly make this work. And then 3 years later, I'm standing in the room of one of those companies, and I'm in a board meeting because they want me to speak. And they said, what are you doing, and how are you doing with your pig? Because, you know, we're upset that you beat us in the last two competitions. And I said, no, that's not true. And they said, sure, I was there. They were at both competitions when I won. And I said, well, it wasn't two, it was three competitions we beat you in. And those are the same guys that called me a heretic back, you know, 2007.
Carl, you ended up on an episode of Bizarre Foods on the Travel Channel. How did that go?
Oh, that was phenomenal. See, when they came to us, they said, you know, we really want to film your pig. All these chefs are telling us to call Carl Blake because he's got this pig, and it's not bizarre, but it's the best pig we've ever had. You really need to call Carl. So eventually the production company called me and said, hey, who are you and what the heck is all this about? And I start talking to them and telling them, and they said, well, we really want to do a show. And then we're going to do iconic foods across the states. And said, we really like to showcase your pig. And I said, well, that'd be great. So they come in, and I knew when they saw my old nasty farm that, you know, their expectation was that they were going to see some dumpy pig farmer character kind of guy cooking a pig on an old gas barrel or something. And I said, no, that's not how we roll in Iowa. I mean, usually when we do stuff, we do it big. And I told them, you guys don't mind if I do this my way? And they said, nope, do it any way you want. Well, I called my buddies from Madison, Chef Dan Fox and Jason Veal, and I said, hey, guys, will you do me a porchetta down here? And they said, we're on our way. And then I called my buddy Big Hat from Big Hat Gourmet Productions, which is he's won four of the five Memphis contests that he's been in for doing barbecue. And I called him and I said, hey, you want to come down? And I said, I need you to come down and roast me a pig. And he's like, I'm there. So all these guys converged on us the night before the Andrew Zimmer show was to be there. They immediately got to work. I mean, I can't believe that I could put eight or nine chefs together in one location with all the egos and everything else that's out there. And just blow it away. I mean, these guys, it was like the left hand knew what the right hand was doing. And it's just like they worked together. They laughed. They did shots of whiskey. They were having fun. You know, it was amazing. And when the chefs were doing their thing, putting that, you know, doing the porchetta, and he saw some of it on the TV, when that pig came out of the roaster, and Andrew Zimmer said, that's world class all by itself, you know. And
what is porchetta?
Porchetta is where you actually take the whole pig and you debone the whole pig. You lay it on its back and you take every bone out of the pig.
Uh-huh.
And once you take the bone out, now you've got this carcass. Now what we do is we lay it out so the meat's all there. We there's lots of different ways you can do it. We've actually taken whole turkeys and put them in here as well as chickens. But we actually take a couple loins, put them in the middle of the pig. Then we put in all the liver, the heart, the kidneys, and all the offal. We put that in there, and it's all cut up. Then we suture the pig up, and we fold it in on itself. And then as soon as the pig is sutured up, we then do truss it. And if you truss it properly so that the trusses are only like 1 inch apart, and you get all these things done, well, the pig looks magical. I mean, it looks professional. I mean, it looks like something you'd see in a movie show. And that's exactly what we did. When we got done, they were blown away. We leave the head on the pig, and the head and the legs. It's the presentation was, I mean, it just made your mouth water because that pig just looks so good. We actually smoked it in applewood. That's why it has that red, rosy red flavor, red coloring.
Does the Iowa Soybean Hall make good barbecue?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, when you mix it with the fat and the meat, you actually have three or four different kinds of flavored meat. So when you mix it up, it's an unbelievable mixture, and you mix it in with this nice, juicy fat that just melts in your mouth. It's not lumpy, it's not greasy, it just melts in your mouth. That's where it's at right there. I mean, I can't make it any better than that.
Do you think someday we'll be able to walk into our local grocery, like, you know, a Hy-Vee and buy your meat?
And that's my hope.
Yeah.
Someday.
Yeah.
I hope it comes to that someday. And I'm working really, really hard They all laughed at me because they want to get into pork, and everybody's losing money at pork. And I said, well, there's got to be a way to make money at it, because the way they're losing money and the way it's being done, I think, is totally wrong.
Now, Carl, I understand you're going to be on the Colbert Report in the near future here?
Yes, on the 27th of March, I'm going to this is really bizarre because they called me 10 minutes after the New York Times article aired or was published. 21 minutes I get a phone call from Colbert's office wanting to put me on the air, and I didn't believe it was actually somebody from the Colbert show.
Yeah, yeah.
And so finally, after I believed her, it was like, oh, wow, and she says, we want you to bring a pig. And the first thing that stuck in my mind was, all I could think of was the episode of Green Acres where Arnold Ziffel goes off to New York City, you know, to be in a television show, and he's got his hat on, his glasses, and his bomber scarf on, and he's riding in the back of a convertible on his way to a television show. And all I could think of is, oh, my God. We're recreating an old Green Acres episode.
So you're taking a pig with you?
Yeah, I am taking a pig with me.
On the plane?
On the plane.
How do you select? How are you going to select one?
A pig?
Yeah, which one are you going
to? Well, what we did was, this whole thing is problematic in more ways than one, if you can imagine. They said, well, you want to bring a pig? And I go, well, it's not that easy because, number one, my pigs they're not tame. I don't have one that runs around. It's potty trained, and what do I do? And I said, yeah, well, I had a litter of pigs. They were born on the 27th of February. So it's still it's a small pig. But the ones I had born in December that we actually show on the air and stuff, those pigs are like 50 pounds now. So I can't hardly take one of those because they're just too big to be dragging around in a pet taxi. So I thought, well, I'll try to take we had a really nice litter of pigs on February 27th, and all of my pigs are black. All my Swabians are black, but in every litter, there's one little striped booger. He looks like a little chipmunk. He's a little striped, and he's a little red, and he's these beautiful little stripes. And there's this one in the litter, and he just has a better personality than all the rest of them. So I asked the Amish gals that I have that helped me out when they raised the pigs, or this Amish gentleman, him and his daughters. He has a number of daughters, and I said, you know, it'd be really great if they could, like, carry him around every day and get him tamed so that I could take him to the show.
Oh, yeah.
And they said, yeah, no problem. The girls like those little pigs anyway. So they've been carrying this pig around trying to make him tame so he can ride in a taxi with me.
Okay. So have you seen him lately? I mean, do they still have him? Or?
Yeah, I saw him. Well, they're going to have him until about the 24th. I'm going to go pick him up on the 24th, and then him and I will get ready, do it together. The biggest thing that I have is, you know, Stephen Colbert, he's a funny guy. I'm just the guy that raised the pigs. I don't want to be too funny of a guy you know, because I don't want him being mad at me or he's the show host. But I don't know. He's the first thing he's going to say, so what's the pig's name? You know, and I'm going to respond either Little Smokey, Bacon, or Pork Chop, or Bacon Bit. I don't know. I don't know what to say without trying to not be funny because, you know, but maybe he'll give me a little leeway and we'll call him Little Smokey, I guess. I don't know.
So you'll just carry him out on the stage with you when you're...
I have no idea. I don't know what they're going to have me do. I mean, until I get there, but I get my own room and I get a motel room and the pig's supposed to be with me. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen when I get there. It's kind of one of those deals where I just kind of have to go with the flow.
Yeah.
And I don't know if when I get there, I'm going to be out there on stage and they're going to come hand him to me, or I don't know. You know, he might bite Colbert for all I know.
Oh, do they bite?
Oh, yeah, they bite. But that's why I had to get one tame, because they will. They'll just reach around and bite you. I mean, these little pigs have really sharp teeth, but we actually clip the eye teeth on our pigs because since they're half Russian, their teeth bite into the mother's teeth. And they can create diseases and stuff. So we always clip their teeth to try to prevent that and raise healthy pigs and healthy sows.
So Little Smokey or whatever the name will be, will be in the – he'll ride in the cargo part of the plane? Or do you have a seat next to you? Or
Well, that hasn't been decided yet. Apparently, I'm flying with Delta, and they said it's okay.
Oh.
But I have to pay some extra money to get him on wherever he's going to be. And I don't know if that's going to be in a seat next to me or if he rides in the cargo with the dogs and other things. I don't know.
What about he could ride first class maybe? Or... Well, this sounds like a really interesting adventure. I wish you well on is this other than the food channel. Is this your first national TV? Or the Travel Channel, rather. Is this your first national TV?
Yeah, this is the first time I've ever been on national TV. The New York Times article was where everything really kicked off. I mean,
yeah.
that just busted everything loose. The next thing you know, I'm just going crazy. But when I walk into Walmart or Lowe's, the other day I had to give out two autographs at Lowe's.
Wow.
I'm like, you don't want my autograph. That's like the fifth autograph I've given in my life. I don't know why we, you know, I'm not used to that stuff. But
well, it sounds like you have a good thing going, Carl.
Sure.
I really wish you well with your pigs, and I hope that your enterprise keeps prospering, and I hope you do well on the Colbert Report. I appreciate you talking to me.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate your time.
Carl Blake raises his Iowa Swabian Hall pigs at his farm called Rustic Rooster Farm near Frederica in Bremer County. Talk of Iowa continues in a minute. Talk of Iowa continues. I'm Dennis Reese, filling in for Charity Nebbe. In Iowa, about 9.5 million acres of land are devoted to soybeans. On only a few acres in rural Iowa County will you find beans growing that you can cook on your stove. They're the black turtle beans grown by third-generation Iowa farmer Jason Grimm. Grimm and his wife Hannah are having a blast growing the legumes, and they're selling like hotcakes. Grimm says the beans are tasty and faster to cook. He says they have many advantages for farmers. Jason, welcome to the program. I understand you're the third generation on your farm?
Yeah. Yep, farm with my dad and my grandpa.
And where is it located?
Our farm is located in Iowa County, south of Williamsburg, kind of right above the English River, up on a ridge.
Uh-huh. How big is it?
We farm about 125 acres of three or four crops.
And where did you come up with the idea of growing beans that are not soybeans, but beans that you can make a meal of?
Primarily from my regional planning work that I do on a day-to-day job of knowing that there's a need to meet a need for legumes and edible beans in a growing local food market.
Just for a minute, tell me the story. You were sitting around one day thinking, gee, it would be kind of great if I could grow beans that could be sold in grocery stores and people could make chili with and make black beans and lots of other dishes.
I would say it kind of started with a friend of mine, Scott Kupke, who works for New Pioneer Food Co-op. Scott was a grocery manager at the Iowa City store, and Scott was always filling the bulk bins one day, and he said, gosh dang it, we need to have some black beans or something here in Iowa. And then at the same time, I was kind of developing... trying to figure out what markets, as a beginning farmer, can I get into to create a market demand that I can meet and not try to compete against larger farms that are raising thousands of acres of corn and soybeans or that as a small farm are not able to compete against. But I was able to find niche markets that I'm able to get a higher price for my premium product and still be able to make enough income to hopefully farm full-time someday.
Right now you have a day job then?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So what sorts of beans are these?
This variety is called Black Turtle.
Mm-hmm.
They are considered an heirloom bean, but I would say the Black Turtle beans are one of the varieties that have been produced the most often. So they're probably on the lower spectrum of what you consider an heirloom variety. I mean, I've grown other varieties called Bumblebee that are far more of an heirloom bean. That's a goal down the road is to expand into other varieties of beans, but at a large scale.
Where else can you find black turtle beans? Are they grown in other parts of the country?
Yeah, edible bean production, there's a large production that happens in the northeastern part of Michigan, the central plains of Nebraska, the northwest kind of border region of South Dakota, Minnesota area. The seed that I buy that I comes from Idaho or Utah. Black bean or dry beans are more of considered a arid type of crop, a dry land crop.
And what's special about the black turtle beans? Or why do you like them?
I like them because my wife and I already use black beans in a lot of different foods, from sauce on a Mexican pizza to soups to hummus. Wide spectrum of products. And I also chose to expand the black beans the fastest because they're the closest in size of beans to a soybean. And on our farm, we already have equipment that allows me to plant a combine and clean those without buying new equipment that would be specialized for kidney beans, for example.
Okay, which are larger, right?
Yeah.
So are these the beans that are you find in Mexican cooking, the black beans that show up at Mexican restaurants?
Yeah, yep.
And those are very good. I mean, they're wonderful beans. They're flavorful.
Yeah, I would just say mine, even though they're called dry beans, these are much fresher. You know, when you buy dry beans in a grocery store, you'll have to soak them for overnight and then cook them, it seems like, for another hour and a half. My beans, when we cook them, we may soak them when we get home yet from work one night for 2 hours, and we'll cook them for another half an hour to 45 minutes, and they'll be done already by then.
Uh-huh. And plus, you can keep these forever on the shelf, right? I mean, years.
Yeah. That's also an important part of the reason why I chose these, because it allows me to still be marketing them in the middle of winter, other than the produce that I grow also.
Yeah. So, Jason, what's the difference between growing edible beans and growing soybeans, the soybeans that are grown everywhere in Iowa?
Well, most soybeans are grown for feed or oil of different products.
Yeah, but what's the process? How does the process differ?
The process from planting to cultivating is just about the same. You plant them about the same time of the year, towards the end of May. The biggest difference would be during harvest time. Most soybeans are combined directly in the field by a combine. Edible beans they're actually cut off the ground. The plant is cut off before it's dry. So in September, typically there's a machine that cuts the plant off on the ground. And then you come back to the field with a combine, and then you thresh the beans once they've dried in the field with the combine. And the reasoning behind that is if you would just let your black beans or any other edible bean dry directly in the field, they're not going to dry consistently across the field. So you're going to have beans that are really dry, beans that are not dry enough yet, and when you combine them, your really dry beans will just split in half or break up into many different pieces. And since they're a food, the goal is for the bean to be whole instead of split and stuff.
And, I mean, if I were driving down the road, do they look different than soybeans? In the middle of the summer, would I be able to tell the difference?
An average person who knows what a soybean field might possibly know the difference. They're not as bushier like soybeans. They're not as tall. They have more of a vining structure to them than a bush, and their flowers are purple on these black turtle beans that I grow, and a soybean flower will be other color.
As far as you know, these are the only black turtle beans in Iowa. You're the only farmer growing these now.
That I know of right now. I know of others that have grown them for a couple of years, but don't do it anymore.
And when was your first crop?
2 years ago, and that was a small quarter acre to experiment with.
And how have you done trying to sell these? You're selling them to the new Pioneer Co-op in Iowa City. Do you see expanding your sales?
Yeah, I actually just spoke with the grocery manager today, and Right now I'm just selling 1 pound bags, but customers who shop at specialty food stores and stuff, they want to buy things in bulk. So the customers there are requiring me to start selling it in bulk, like, so people can buy as much as they want at a time.
Yeah. You mentioned that you found some equipment that your, what, grandfather or father had around that you can use for these beans. What, a separator? Is that?
Yeah, it's called a fanning mill. That's how we clean the beans after we combine them, because they still have small pieces of dirt or chaff from the plants. So, and this machine, I don't know the exact year it was made, but it's from the 1940s. And it's from western Nebraska, where my mom is from. And I have a grandpa who's still alive that's 93, and his brother who just turned 90, who both bought this machine for themselves. They raise wheat, so it was used to clean wheat at one time. And actually, the screens that I used to clean my beans had never been used. They were still in the original box when I started using this machine.
Your grandfather still live on the farm?
Yeah, yep. He still lives on the farm with him, by himself.
By himself, and he's 93?
Yep, and gets around. And then I have three uncles that now farm the family farm there. So they take care of him when they're there.
Uh-huh. Wonderful. I understand you learned about growing vegetables from your grandmother.
Yeah, my grandma here, my parents and my sister and I, we grew up on the actual farm. My grandparents live off the farm. But always growing up, my grandma always had it seemed like an acre, but it was maybe a quarter of an acre. It always was huge to me when I was really young. So I was always out there learning from grandma how to plant stuff and when to plant things. Today, she may think my garden's getting a little big, though, because it's growing every year.
And how many acres right now?
This year, I'm projecting to have about an acre large of produce of a variety of crops.
Okay, a variety of crops. So what are we talking about?
I grow a lot of Napa cabbage or Chinese cabbage, another red cabbage, head lettuce, carrots. So I focus on bok choy, focus on more of a leafy green head lettuce, stuff that'll store a little bit longer.
Now, all of this, Jason, is considered organic?
We aren't certified organic, but I use organic practices on all of my crops.
And you're not certified because you're still working on that? Or
yeah, still focusing, growing our rotations system on our farm and trying to create a system that works for us. The goal of mine is eventually become certified organic.
Okay, so that means no pesticides and so forth.
Yep, no herbicides, no pesticides, use of rotations to manage weeds on the farm, mechanical cultivation to manage those weeds as well.
And you've been doing okay with this so far? No pest problems or blight or anything like that so far, at least?
No, I mean, we definitely have pests, but we manage them by going out in the field and tracking those, finding out when they are. We have used organically approved pesticides to help deter those pests. For example, on potatoes, I've used products before.
Uh-huh. Now, last week we had Lynn Rosetta Casper on the broadcast with Charity Nebbe from the Splendid Table, and it was really interesting because Charity asked her what her favorite food is, and she said she's a bean girl. There's nothing better than beans, and she has, I'm sure, 100 recipes of how she likes to use beans in her various books. But how many sorts of edible beans are there? You're growing in Iowa, your black turtle bean. How can you expand this? How many beans are there out there?
Well, I think it's probably endless.
really?
Yeah. I've grown in larger quantities kidney beans, pinto beans.
Pinto beans,
A variety called Jacob's Cattle that is about the same size as pinto. There's cannellini beans. I just learned of a new one back here in February called giant white bean. It's the size of your thumb.
Really?
It's
really
like buttery kind of flavor. So I think the varieties are endless, and there are also the opportunities to create new varieties of taking other older varieties and mixing them, and you can create some pretty colorful and pretty, beautiful looking beans too.
What's the top seller in the world of beans?
I would probably consider the pinto, the kidney, and the black bean are probably the most common.
Yeah. I've heard of the Great Northern.
Yep, yep. Your white beans, yep.
And my least favorite would be lima beans. I don't know how you feel about lima beans.
Oh, I like them, but lima beans are typically picked as a fresh, like a almost like a pea. They're fresh versus dry, but you can buy them dry too.
Okay, yeah, I guess that's right. I've never seen them dry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What's your favorite bean recipe with your own black turtle beans?
My wife and I definitely during the winter it's always soups.
Yeah.
But we've been experimenting with different using the beans as a puree for different sauces.
Mm.
So we put them on pizza with different vegetables on top of that.
Okay.
Hummus is another, you know, I make a lot of black bean hummus with garlic and instead of, it's pretty much the same recipe, just not using garbanzo beans.
Garbanzo beans, another bean.
Yep, that's another bean. There have been people that have experimented with them also.
I think I've only had hummus made with garbanzo beans, but you can make hummus with your beans.
Yep, yep. It's black versus like the tan color.
And does it taste the same?
Yeah, I would. I don't feel like there's much difference.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, Jason, what are your plans in the years ahead to expand, get your organic certification you're working on, maybe expand this edible bean production, more acres, more customers?
Well, so this past year we planted 3 acres of the black turtle beans. This year I've already bought seed to plant 6 acres to expand that. And I'm thinking about planting, still debating yet to plant 1 acre of pinto beans so that we can experiment with the harvesting capabilities of that. And then down the road, I would like to invest into a combine that's made specially for harvesting dry beans so I can expand to beans that are larger seeds. Because kidney beans, I can't harvest them with my current combine because of how large they are as a bean.
I read in the New Pioneer Co-op newsletter that you were inspired by Aldo Leopold. How did that happen?
Well, since my degree is in landscape architecture, during my schooling, we had to take a semester and travel the entire Mississippi River. So in vans, you know, all of us packed in there. And during that trip, we were required to read Aldo Leopold's Sand County Almanac. I already enjoyed farming and stuff, but one of the quotes of his that came out of the book is a quote that talks about how our society, most people feel like food just comes from the grocery store and doesn't know that there's multiple other steps before the grocery store. Same with where heat comes from or electricity. We as a society don't know where those things come from.
Yeah. Aldo Leopold, born in Burlington, Iowa, of course.
Yep.
Well, Jason, I really wish you well with this. Where do I go right now to buy your beans? Are they at the New Pie Co-op in Iowa City stocked right now? Or?
Yeah, they're on the shelf in both stores currently.
Okay. Hopefully we'll see those in Des Moines and Fort Dodge and Mason City at some point.
Yep, yep. I've already spoken to a couple other co-ops and natural food stores. And in Des Moines, you can actually go to the Hawk restaurant in the East Village, and they have them specialize in a soup right now.
Well, good luck with everything. It was great to have you here.
Yep, thank you.
Jason Grimm of Grimm Family Farms in Iowa County, having great success growing black turtle beans. And that's Talk of Iowa. Executive producer is Catherine Perkins. For Charity Nebbe, I'm Dennis Reese.
Here's a lovely song about my favorite food. Lima, lentils, oy, and pinto, navy, northern, and garbanzo, kidneys, and frijoles, negros. I love beans. I love beans. Woo, woo, woo. I love beans. How about you? High in fiber, low in fat. Hey, I bet you didn't know that. When I eat